cash, homie.
Well, all right, all right, all right. We are back with another episode of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Brown. Joined, as always, got the full crew with me here. Reporting from a brand new location, it seems. New background, new backdrop, new t-shirt. Doctor, Eric, what's going on, my man?
Yeah, this was just like a happy accident that I happened to be wearing my Trust the Process Joel Embiid shirt while in Philadelphia. But, yeah, it's good. It's good. Been, you know, flew today, had a nice little dinner, some free glasses of wine. So I'm ready to go.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take advantage of this today. Eric's fired up, and our man from the left coast, Luke, what's going on with you, my man? How you doing?
I'm doing great.
You made it through all the new material in the QB annual?
I have not, but I've been enjoying it a lot today. But right now I'm watching Kansas State versus Kentucky, and it's a grinder and I love it.
Yeah, I keep forgetting. Luke also likes college basketball.
That's what his Twitter line says.
The Twitter told me that.
I took it off, though, because it got old. But I do like college basketball.
Well, all right. Well, gentlemen, it's been a little while since we've been together here. And Eric, I must admit, and I've already admitted this to you, privately, but I'm going to admit publicly here that, I haven't been keeping up with the forecast as much as I should be. Because me and Stitcher are beefing, because your podcast isn't on the Stitcher for me right now. So I guess before we jump into some of the stuff we were talking about before, I guess, what interesting things have you and George been up to?
Yeah, man. I mean, the Stitcher thing is really, we took over a podcast channel from two dudes that were doing basically draft analysis. And then now we got our own like iTunes station, but for whatever reason, maybe because Mike Renner's out of town or whatever, but for whatever reason, we don't have, update on Stitcher, but we've been doing some pretty cool stuff. We've been, doing some team reviews. So this last week we did a review on, the Packers and the Lions, really interesting kind of like look at that divisional, group. And then we also talked about, and I tweeted this figure out. We talked about who won as of now the Jets Colts trade. So if you want to follow me at PFF _ Eric Eager, you can look at sort of that graph. It looks like the Colts win that trade in sort of like 80% of universes. So yeah,
people were mad at you because I went and I looked at I think you tweeted it out. And yeah, the replies from the Jets folks were very, very angry that you said that they overpaid in that trade.
Yeah, and I mean, I get it. Like, that's why, we don't say like, okay, the average approximate value for this position is this, the average is that. If you actually do that, you say, well, the Colts unequivocally won that trade. And I think what we're doing is we're being fair to the Jets here. We're saying, okay, there are going to be some universes where they pick a quarterback at 3 and he's fantastic, right? And there are going to be some universes where, obviously the Colts, their 3 picks do pretty well and the Jets pick. So, like, I think it is somewhat, superficial to say, okay, here are some averages and in the average case, the Colts always win. I think what we're trying to do is give you scenarios wherein the Jets win that trade. And Jets fans were like, well, this can all happen. It's like, yeah, that's why we simulate it all the time. And that's, but yeah, nobody's going to be not mad on Twitter, no matter what. That's like the axiom.
That is true. That is very true. And Luke, speaking of mad on Twitter. we're going to jump into it because, we haven't all been together and talked about things here, and I've talked to the boys on the Climbing the Pocket podcast here, but I wanted to get into it with you guys as well here. It's official, the thing that everyone knew, the worst kept secret in the NFL, Kirk Cousins, Minnesota, the match that that everyone could see miles and miles away. It's happened. Sheldon's also here now as well, and we've had some time to process this whole thing, and I'm interested now and kind of where you're at with it, how you're feeling, because, I know you had some thoughts about, Mr. Kirk Cousins and what his kind of talent profile looked like. before the signing. And, you know, now that it's here and it's official and it's fully guaranteed and it's a big dollar amount, where are you at with it all? What are you making of this signing and kind of what it means for the team in the short and I guess maybe the medium term?
I think in the short term, like in this year, this is probably going to look really good immediately because the Vikings have a team that can make most quarterbacks look really good. And I think we'll talk more about supporting cast later. I think in the long term, it'll be really hard to sustain that situation, not be really because of the contract, because I think, like, you know, you can always finesse the cap and figure stuff out and figure out ways to keep the right pieces around him, but more because, but it's just hard to keep that consistent, right? Like, it's hard to go through a whole season and not have, like, one of your wide receivers get injured or not have a lot of injuries along the offensive line or not lose a couple offensive linemen to free agency or whatever. Over the course of this 3-year contract, it's going to be really hard to put that situation around him. And I think most people will agree that Kirk Cousins requires good talent around him to succeed, right? Like, he falters under pressure. Most people understand that, like, he is not very good under pressure compared to the rest of the league. And I think with the accuracy data that just came out at PFF and in PFF's QB book, it really showcases why he also needs good receivers, because, like, his ability to hit you, like, right on the numbers or right where you're supposed to be in that accuracy plus bucket were a lot lower than you wish they were. And that said, his, like, misses weren't uncatchable, but they always would require an adjustment. So if you have receivers that can adjust to those not quite perfect but, like, still kind of require a little work passes, and you can keep the pocket clean, then yeah, you can be successful with Kirk Cousins. It's going to be really hard to sustain that over the long term. That said, I'm okay with the process that led us here. I'm okay with the Vikings making an evaluation and then going and getting their guy and paying whatever they had to do that. I disagree with the evaluation, but I definitely don't disagree with the process of just going all out, get your guy, get your quarterback, and then let's roll.
Okay, and you know, Eric, obviously, you know, heard you on the Purple Podcast, and you and Matt Collar talked about it a little bit. But I guess what are your thoughts on, you know, the signing, Kirk Cousins, and kind of, you know, what it means for the Vikings short term, medium term, and kind of what the Vikings should be doing. I guess that can be our transition to the supporting cast conversation. What the Vikings really should be doing to maximize our chances of success with Kirk Cousins as the quarterback.
Well, I think what you have to do is you have to view the window very short, right? So, you know, with the way that the Vikings were currently going, and even if you consider from the time that Zimmer took over to now, they had been a team that was sort of up and coming, that they were building their roster in sort of this long game way and, you know, sort of winning, you know, winning, getting better, going 11-5 in 2015, going 13-3 in 2017. Now it's one of those things where, you know, they get Richardson, shorter deal. Cousins, that deal is actually sort of backloaded and guaranteed. So to some degree, I think what you have to do if you're the Vikings and you sign Cousins to the deal that you sign him to, you have to consider him, you know, the player to try to get you the Super Bowl in 2018, possibly 2019. But, you know, ultimately, I think the answer to your question is not much. They can't do a whole lot with the money that they're going to have other than keeping their original players. But I think that that's already in the calculus for them. And then simply sort of viewing the window as being right now, which is unfortunate given, you know, the way in which they were trending.
Okay, so you're viewing the windows right now. And you know, Luke kind of, you know, echoed a sentiment that I see a lot amongst Viking fans, which is, you know, the roster that we have right now is one that can make a quarterback look good. But one of the things that Luke also mentioned quite a few times during the season is that, you know, the rate at which Case Keenum was avoiding sacks was something that was, you know, basically legendary and ultimately unsustainable. So I guess, Eric, and I'll start with you and then we can circle back to Luke on it. When we are talking supporting cast, I know that, you know, in this fantasy football world in which we live, supporting cast tends to mean the guys who score points for me on my fantasy team or on DraftKings or something like that. But I feel like an important part of this calculus is being left out when we talk about supporting cast in the Vikings and say compare Kirk Cousins in 2015, 2016 to the situation that he's coming into in the Vikings for 2018. I guess, what are your thoughts on when we compare that team that he had with you know, Deshaun and Pierre Garçon, Jordan Reed, and, you know, that offensive line to the situation that he's coming into with the Vikings, where obviously our wide receivers are amazing, but there are some other things that he had there that maybe he doesn't have, you know, with the Vikings.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, well said. Like, you know, the offensive line, they had Brandon Scherff, who was a top five pick or top 10 pick at least. They had Trent Williams, who's better than sort of anything that the Vikings are going to use at the, you know, left tackle position. And, you know, and the, I don't think their receivers are that much worse than the Vikings are going to have now. For example, I think Jordan Reed is a far better option in the passing game than Kyle Rudolph, as is, I think, even at his advanced age, Vernon Davis. So, you know, if you're a Vikings fan, I think, like, you really have to be, you know, you have to hope that they hit on a guard or two in the draft. They find a tight end that's a mismatch kind of player in the draft. And you sort of luck out there, because right now, you know, you do have those receivers, but interestingly, those receivers stayed healthy most of the season ago, and the offensive line did not crumble, at least from, like, sort of the results perspective. And so if those things crumble at all, we might see Cousins sort of exposed, especially relative to his contract.
Yeah. And Luke, obviously, you know, I started this question kind of, speaking to some of the things that you mentioned as we were in last season about our offensive line and, you know, pressure and Case Keenum. I guess, what are your thoughts as we move forward with, you know, Kirk Cousins in the fold? And I know that you've had some takes about Mr. Cousins and how he handles pressure and things like that. So I guess, what are your thoughts and what are you hoping to see between now and the season kicking off that would make you feel better about things before we get going for 2018?
I think the offensive line is at an acceptable place right now, but they don't have any depth, which is super worrisome. I would like for them to get a guard or two. I'd love for them to hit on one in the draft or get somebody that just, like, ascends through competition or whatever. That would be great. But I'm okay with Riley Reiff at left tackle. And I think that's going to be the most important for Cousins specifically, because he has a really bad sense for pressure, especially coming from the blind side. Whereas a guy like Keenum or Teddy was kind of able to feel that and move around and extend a play. And most of Cousins' pressure issues stem from that, like, poor internal clock. But what I want to see right now is an acquisition of depth. Like, I like the Tom Compton sighting that happened today, just because it's another body that can capably play in the event of an injury. Right now, they have built a starting roster that will rival any in the league. But we know, and we've learned kind of the hard way, that it's hard to keep that together for 16 games. And it's not really up to you who gets hurt. So I think getting depth and making sure that, you know, when it's week 14 and some guys have missed games and some guys have, you know, been injured and somebody's on IR, that you still have the kind of roster that can support Kirk Cousins going into the playoffs.
Okay. Okay. So the next thing that I obviously need to get your takes on, because it seems that you're a little bit more measured in your takes in terms of what, I guess, your expectations are with us adding Kirk Cousins into the fold. But the new odds are out, and the Vikings are basically second to the New England Patriots in terms of Super Bowl odds. So, Luke, I guess, is that fair? You know, the Vikings teams with Case Keenum, who most would argue is a less capable quarterback than Kirk Cousins. They made it to the NFC Championship game. So with the addition of Kirk Cousins and Sheldon Richardson, is this kind of a Super Bowl or bust season for you? And do you think that the odds of us being, you know, one of the top teams in the NFC with the best chance of winning the Super Bowl, do you think that's a fair assessment of where the Vikings are as a team?
I definitely think the Vikings have one of the best rosters in the NFC, probably second only to the Eagles, who are doing some incredible things right now. But, like, that's kind of a weird way to parse it, right? Because if you just say, all right, so the Patriots are the number one most likely team, so I guess they win the Super Bowl, like, it's weird to parse that. I see it more as the Vikings are one of a handful of teams who are good enough to win the Super Bowl. There's probably five or six teams that are good enough every year, the Patriots, the Steelers, probably the Packers every year, that are, you know, good enough to win the Super Bowl. And I think the Vikings are definitely one of those. So if you can stay relatively healthy, get into the playoffs, and at that point, you're kind of at the mercy of variance more than I think as fans we want to admit the teams have control over. But I think last year they were good enough to win the Super Bowl, and this year they're still good enough to win the Super Bowl. That definitely hasn't changed, and I think it would be naive to think that the team has regressed, except in the context of depth, because just a lot of depth people have been lost to free agency, but the offseason isn't over.
Okay, and Eric, what about you? What are your thoughts on kind of the obviously, I mean, you know, you make some big signings like those you made. You know, expectations get ramped up from a fan perspective. You know, Kirk Cousins was the crown jewel of free agency. So, I mean, some of Vegas and then the odds that are being put out are about, you know, I guess the wisdom of the crowd and where you think people are going to put their money. But I guess, do you feel like what you're seeing in terms of, you know, the odds on the Vikings are reasonable based on, you know, what you've seen or what you look at from an analytical perspective?
I mean, so if you're talking about 9-1, I think that that's really, really, you know, probably too bullish on the Vikings. I think it's fair to say that the roster for Minnesota is pretty highly up there in terms of the NFC. But if I just look at like quarterbacks, right? And I think one of the things that we have to do when we see a team like, you know, the Eagles with Nick Foles and Carson Wentz winning the Super Bowl, we have to be careful not to overreact. It's a quarterback's game. So if you're looking at the quarterbacks in the NFC, which, you know, how many guys would you rather bet on, you know, than Kirk Cousins? I can think of like, you know, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, just in that one division alone, Aaron Rodgers in your own division, maybe Matthew Stafford. And then you go out to the East and, you know, you have Carson Wentz coming off an injury, but, you know, still a pretty good player. The Washington Redskins themselves bet on Alex Smith instead of Kirk Cousins. And then in the NFC West, you know, you have, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo and Russell Wilson, and those types of players. So I just, when I view it from that lens, I think like if you're going to expect, you know, a Vikings team with Kirk Cousins to be a Super Bowl contender, you're sort of going to have to need what you had out of them a season ago when they had, you know, Case Keenum, and a defense that didn't have any injuries, and fantastic special teams, and you know, wide receivers playing above their head. The odds of that repeating, even with a slightly better quarterback, I just don't see them being 9-1.
And you brought something up there that it just kind of, you know, triggered that I wanted to ask this question. So most, you know, would say, I think most reasonable people would say that, you know, Aaron Rodgers comes back, he's healthy, he's the best quarterback in the division. But I want both your takes. Kirk Cousins, Matt Stafford, who is the better quarterback?
I mean, I think you'd have to stay, just from the longevity perspective, I think you'd have to say Matthew Stafford. He's dealt with, you know, and he's dealt with having Megatron, not having Megatron. He's dealt with having a run game, not having a run game. On the PFF forecast, we talked about their supporting cast. They had great receivers last year, but their offensive line was quite bad with like Greg Robinson and Travis Swanson and those guys. And then they've really, you know, 2014, they had a really good defense, and Sue and Fairley and all those guys left. And, you know, they haven't had a particularly good defense recently. And, you know, they're still kind of in the mix, and, you know, they're 9-7. They're, you know, they're a game or so out of the playoff race. Cousins, you know, they've been in the playoff race in Washington. He sort of hasn't gotten them over the top there. I would say Stafford, but I think it's close. But I would say Stafford. And if that's the answer, how much are we willing to bet on the Lions, you know, every single season? I don't think it's 9-1 ever. I don't even think it's 20-1 on the Lions ever. So that really does, I think, put in perspective, you know, sort of, I think how long, you know, the Vikings odds should be relative to what they are currently.
Okay. And Luke, what about you? What are your thoughts on the, you know, Cousins versus Stafford? If you're kind of stacking them up, you know, based on the things that you're looking at when you're analyzing quarterbacks.
I think if a play breaks down, most people would take Stafford. And you can measure that by, you know, looking at performance under pressure, like passer rating under pressure, accuracy under pressure. You can look at that at like as like accuracy outside of the pocket. There's like ways you can intelligently chart play, and a lot of the stuff that PFF has done to kind of measure that. But I think most people would take Stafford when a play is broken down and you need to be improvisational. I think most people would take Stafford in clutch situations. He's got a reputation and a penchant for being unbelievable in like fourth quarter comeback drives, good on third down and stuff. And I think from just a raw talent perspective, you would have to take Stafford, and you can go back to just like arm strength and kind of like draft takes and stuff for that. So I think, like, I guess show me what Kirk Cousins does better. I'm having trouble coming up with something like that. And even if I can think, I mean, maybe I'm blanking on something, but even if there are one or two traits that Kirk Cousins has that are better, I think overall is the package. If you swapped Cousins and Stafford, the Vikings get better.
Okay. Well, that's not what I was hoping to hear from either of you at all. Okay. So now that I'm depressed here, I guess, you know, Eric, give me something. Give me a reason for hope for next year as we go in. You know, why should I be excited about next season? Because both of you, you've brought me down here, making me think that it's possible that we could have the third best quarterback in the division.
The third overall pick in the upcoming draft.
Oh, no. What? No. I'm just no, messing. Don't. No.
We'll
don't
just get that because we traded Barr for it.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my.
The third overall pick?
Well, I mean, hey, if you can get one of these GMs that hates hashtag analytics and you can trade him a thumping linebacker for the third overall pick, let's do it.
Yeah, we'd have to do that. Yeah, we would have
Gregson
to.
Up to? Can we get him a job?
David Gettleman.
I mean, yeah, it's Barkley at two.
And Barkley at two, man. I think this running back hatred is nonsense, guys.
Hey, running backs add about 5 wins to your team, is what the internet has told me.
To your fantasy team, yeah, absolutely.
To your real team, Ezekiel Elliott and Leonard Fournette both show that when you draft a running back early, your team goes to the playoffs in the following year. That's how that works.
That was incredible.
So I think you can make an argument that Sheldon Richardson's going to have some sack regression. He only had one a season ago, but he was fairly good in pressure. So I think you can, and then the same thing's true with Danielle Hunter. So I do think that you can, like, if you're looking for something to be happy about with respect to the Vikings, I do think that they have some of the pieces to continue a really good defense. They had, you know, some success covering the slot despite having sort of a hodgepodge there. If they go out and either draft or sign a cornerback who can play, you know, fairly well in the slot, I do like that. But those are just a couple of examples of things to be excited about. I think Dalvin Cook coming back is certainly something to, you know, to monitor and, you know, and enjoy for a Vikings fan, having, you know, game-breaking running back there. So there are things. I'm just saying, like, you know, in terms of, you know, it was sort of like when the Vikings bought Brett Favre in 2011, you know, or 2009, I'm sorry. You do that for one reason and one reason only, you know. And when they lost the NFC Championship game in 2009, you know, we all, I think, had this sick feeling in our stomach that was different than 1998, which was that, you know, that was the one shot and, you know, we're not coming back here for a while, you know. And I feel like, you know, with every single Viking sort of, you know, mistake that they've made over the last, you know, few years, there was always this like optimism. The Blair Walsh missed the kick in 2015. We're all like, okay, yeah, but they have a really good, you know, really good defense. They're building something here. We should be pretty happy about the season that they had and look forward to the future. You know, if they don't cash in with Kirk Cousins, there are going to be ramifications that are downstream. So, you know, that to me is like the thing that's disappointing. Not so much, you know, I think they're going to be a good team this year. I just wonder, like, how sustainable is that? And you know, will that go into the future so much?
And Luke, for you, you know, now you have to give me something. Make me feel good about what's going on with these Vikings as we get into next season. What's the thing that you're looking at that's making you feel, you know, more positive than, you know, some of these other things that have happened of late?
So as we go through the season, I have a prediction that Kirk Cousins is going to have fewer total passing yards than he had at Washington, and people are going to panic about it. And smart folks like us are going to know that that's a good thing, because I think the Vikings are built to get early leads and to keep them, which will lead to less passing, which will lead to fewer total yards. And I think we could definitely see like a regression in Kirk Cousins' like box score stats, but the team's like 12-4, and we can be really, really happy about that. And then in terms of the future, right now my brain is kind of shifted from, okay, you've got this big contract, there's a no trade clause, you're not gonna you You're not going to be able to like restructure and kick the can down the road. Then you get into a Joe Flacco situation. We're doing this, right? We're paying this guy this money. That's happening. So to enable that and to allow the team to stay sustainable, you're going to have to draft players that can replace expensive pieces. You know, in a couple years when Everson Griffin's really expensive and on the wrong side of 30, hopefully we have an edge rusher that can step right in and make up that, like make up for him in production while being a lot cheaper. And then that allows us to like keep the other pieces around. Right now, I do think that if the Vikings play their cards right, they can keep whoever they want. Maybe not now that Sheldon Richardson is in the equation. You probably can't extend him as well. But now you're in a situation where you're like, do I extend Sheldon Richardson or do I extend, say, Eric Kendricks? And that's a decision you get to make, and that's a good position to be in because you have the potential to like have a three-tech instead of an off-ball linebacker, which is a more important position. So I think that's where your brain has to go. The Kirk Cousins thing has happened. It's probably an overpay, and it's fully guaranteed, and that's not very good. But that doesn't make it impossible to keep the team together or to at least keep them like quality. You just have to keep drafting well. And like, if you look at a team like the Ravens, you can say that Joe Flacco tanked their team, or you can say that absolutely god awful drafts for like 5 years tanked their team. And I think the latter has a lot more impact than the former. So as long as the team keeps drafting well, which they're pretty good at drafting well, especially in the last few years.
In years divisible by three, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's where
we love the draft. I kill that with the joke.
No. But there's just another thing that, you know, Luke kind of brought up in there that he mentioned Everson Griffin and, you know, kind of down the road. But as we look, you know, at say a team like, you know, the New England Patriots, who, you know, they trade a lot, and that's one of the things that, you know, them and Philly, you know, in the last few years have led the NFL in making trades. You know, it's kind of off topic a little bit, you know, with this and kind of where we are in the season. It doesn't really make a, maybe in the offseason, doesn't make a ton of sense. But if there were, are there players that either of you look at as, you know, maybe we trade that player a year earlier than conventional wisdom to kind of help us bolster in another position of weakness? Or do you think that just kind of where we are now with our depth being what it is, we kind of need to keep the whole band together and just ride it out and see where it goes?
I think this speaks to Luke's point that, you know, the Vikings really need depth because, you know, there isn't somebody like who are they going to trade? Laquan Treadwell, you know, or they don't really have a third defensive end even on the team that you'd be willing to trade or willing to have play instead of Everson, right? So, you know, on the defensive line, you're not trading Shamar, you know, Shamar Stephens, a free agent even, but like there's nobody behind the two guys that they're starting right now, you know, and linebacker, you know, maybe if it's somebody like, Crenshaw, like, there's not a ton of depth on the team. The top end guys are really strong. I do think Anthony Barr might be the one that you sort of let go. I don't necessarily know if they're ready to play somebody like Ben Gedeon or, Crenshaw Brothers or somebody like that this season. So, I would say that that's probably not going to be something they do. They might trade a draft pick before anything else in that regard.
I think the draft probably decides this for us. Like, this would be a great question to revisit after the draft because, like, right now we don't have anybody behind Eric Kendricks, but, like, if an off-ball linebacker falls to us at 30 that, like, definitely shouldn't be there and we want to jump on it, and I don't know enough about the off-ball linebackers in this draft to like come up with an example, but if that something like that happens, or like a good safety, now suddenly we can trade Andrew Sandejo, or we can like let him go and save some money. Then like those moves will kind of start to take shape. I think my opinion of Anthony Barr right now is that he's so important from an X's and O's perspective because Mike Zimmer needs a linebacker that can be fast enough to go from the line of scrimmage into a coverage role, and that's super hard to replace. I think it would be hard to find somebody who can do what Anthony Barr does, even though like thumping linebacker is generally a replaceable thing. I think one with the athleticism of Anthony Barr is hard to find. But I think like you could definitely trade Linval Joseph if you find another good nose tackle somehow. You could trade Everson Griffin if you find a good edge rusher. You could trade Eric Kendricks if you find, you know, somebody who's better than Kentrell Brothers. And like if you hit on a wide receiver, maybe you look at Diggs or Thielen. Like it's hard right now to part ways with like all these beloved players, especially from a fan perspective, but depending on what you do in the draft, you know, and depending on what we have when we like come into training camp and we realize, holy crap, this linebacker is really good. Who knows? Maybe we've got a, you know, we suddenly Eric Kendricks is being moved to a team that needs him way more than we do at that point.
Okay. All right. And to bring us home today, this evening, I want to give Eric an opportunity to brag a little bit more because we've kind of talked a little bit about it, about some new stuff from PFF. And Eric, I want you to talk about it because, yeah, that stuff in the QB annual, it's really, really cool. And I've only just now started to be able to kind of dig in and play around with it. But yeah, tell us what's the new stuff that you guys have, are bringing for us. And how did that whole process kind of work in terms of, you know, determining, you know, if a pass is actually accurate and how much it affects, you know, yards after the catch and all that good stuff?
Yeah. So a lot of that was sort of basic, you know. Our football guys are really the ones who drove that conversation. Steve Palazzolo really saying, you know, accuracy matters, obviously, in football. You know, we really want to, you know, understand it and, you know, harness it. And then he charted 2016 for quarterbacks, you know, sort of even without talking to the analytics group. And then over the course of the last few months, myself, George, we've actually taken some of our sort of advanced metrics that we've created, expected points, even something simple like yards after the catch, and showed Steve and then even the higher ups at PFF, like, you know, if you have different gradations of accuracy, you get more yards per catch. If you have different gradations of accuracy, you get more expected points. And even this is like you're controlling for quality of throw. So we take all of the zero graded passes. So, you know, can you throwing like a 5-yard pass to a hitch route on first and 10, receiver catches it, runs out of bounds, gains 7 yards. That's generally a zero graded throw. That's an expected throw from a quarterback. But even amongst those, like being more accurate leads to better outcomes for the offense. So that got the ball rolling. PFF put in a few more man hours into charting it. We charted 2017. And then George did a lot of his like data visualization magic, and we ended up with this new iteration of the annual. Funny that it seems to have come out the same day that another person came out with their quarterback book. So, whoops.
And and just completely knocked me off my train of thought there. And you know, Luke, I know that you mentioned that you just started to dig into it. But you've been plastering accuracy stuff all over my timeline of late. So I guess what are the things that you found most interesting at your first glance over this this new QB annual that just happened to come out today?
So I love that you can like look at a specific quarterback on this and like pretty easily come up with like a nuanced evaluation of them just by looking at it. Like you can look at Kirk Cousins and say, okay, he doesn't throw as many dimes as you wish he did, but his misses aren't as bad as everybody else's. Like that's a nice nuanced take that is now backed up by like really good meticulous data. So I love being able to do that. And I think like in the world of analytics, this like intelligent charting where somebody watched actual film, but then like also applied quantification and like counted things. I think that is the brightest future of analytics. And I think like PFF's grades are like the Sigmund Freud of that, right? Like the place where that started. And I think this is an evolution of that same idea that adds more nuance and adds more specificity to it. And makes it a lot harder to like disagree with where you say, Aaron Rodgers got a bad grade on this game. Well, your whole system sucks. It's way easier to like consume something like this. And it's a lot more relatable and accessible to a general public that like doesn't want to have to think that much. So I love being able to lay this stuff out. It's so cool.
Yeah. What I think about it, you know, in terms of like, as you said, look, using math to better chart football or better understand football, you know, I do think of like past people who have said, I created this metric. We made fun of speed score on one of our podcasts where you're like, you make this metric that supposedly models speed better, you know, for college, you know, NFL prospects. And it's like, well, but does that do anything? You make a new number, and it, does that measure anything? Like, does it predict wins, or does it even do players keep that over the course of their careers and things like that? And I think when you do kind of create new measures, that's why, you know, I have so much appreciation for people like Josh, Hermsmeyer, people like that, who like they're looking at trying to come up with measures that can give them the most information with the least amount of input. And that's, you know, there's a lot of input that goes into our charting, but at some degree, like what we're getting out of it is a lot more of information, a lot more sticky information, information about a quarterback that can better contextualize how good he is.
And all of that is awesome. I'm loving all of that. And yeah, I think that's all of the information I wanted to pull out of you gentlemen today. Because, you know, it had been a little while. But before we go, Eric, you know, you have been quite busy of late. I guess what of the many things that you and George, I guess the PFF analytics team have been working on that you want to plug or let the listeners know about?
Yeah, so we just had an article, two articles the last 2 weeks. One was on the value of a slot cornerback. So looking at kind of the Minka Fitzpatricks of the world and, you know, quantifying you know, sort of how, you know, how well offenses do when they throw to the slot, and should you be investing more money into players that cover those positions? That's been something. And then obviously the PFF forecast, which I do every week on iTunes and things like that. So go ahead and when you're done listening to this podcast, go ahead and give that one a listen too.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And Luke, how about yourself, man? What you working on in the off season?
Right now over at Purple PTSD, there is a mock draft we did, and we like live streamed the whole thing, and you can actually go and watch that. I did that with Sean Borman of Vikings Territory, and Nick Olson, who's World World on Reddit, also was there. JR was there. That was a really good time. I'm doing a little bit more film stuff. I think I might write about it's time. I'm ready. I can write about why the Vikings lost the NFC Championship, with an eye toward like, how worried should we be about something like that happening again, which I don't think we should be very worried, because I think the reason that we lost is something that like isn't applicable to every game. So I might do something like that. I might do something about Laquon Treadwell. I'm not quite sure. I'm kind of still feeling it out and still trying to, you know, it's the off season. Like, we got time.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want to. It's the off season. Well, gentlemen, thank you for making the time. I know that, you know, we got Eric here out on the road, but he made time to come on and record with us. Luke, as always, you know, thank you for making time a little bit later than usual, but you know, still early for you. You still got your whole night ahead of you. And yeah. Listeners, thanks for sticking with us here on this episode of the Pocket Protectors podcast. I'm your host, Jason Brown, here with the good doctor, Eric Eager, and my man, Luke Braun. Y'all have a good one.